Good morning. This is Mike Stola for the Stola Real Estate Report on the Couch Roundtable. So what's happening in the world of investment sales? Are buildings being sold? Are apartments being sold? Is retail doing better these days? I don't know the answer. So today I brought a founding principal and founding partner, Vic Sozio, of the Ariel Property Advisors to tell us what's happening in the market.
Good morning, Michael. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So since I wanted to know what's happening in the market, I looked recently at some of the press releases and other projects. Let's talk about some of the new deals that you've worked out and the leverage and everything else on the deals. Let's talk about Coney Island, the Noble Avenue property in the Bronx, and so on.
Sure. Well, you're touching on a few different product types there, and we could expand on that. But as it relates to the Sea Park deal, what we did in Coney Island and closed in 2023, I think that's a good example of a large institutional type of asset that is really categorized as affordable housing with a capital A. And with that type of product, we still have a good depth of interest from many different types of buyers, including institutional equity providers and investors. And part of the reason is that, you know, A, you have buckets of capital that are mission driven and are seeking these assets at all times. But even from the private and high net worth and family office side of the market, you have interest. And part of it is that in a world that's changed so dramatically in the last 5 to 10 years, these affordable housing assets still provide opportunities to add value through different initiatives and business plans that are still available to these operators, while also preserving the assets and preserving their affordability. And what we saw in Sea Park was a perfect example of this. This was a former Mitchell Lama project that opted out in the early 2000s, got a complete rehab and an allocation of tax credits. Fast forward to today, the buyer, which was a group that was led by Treadway, found a way to preserve it vis-a-vis a new tax benefit, a 420C tax benefit, a commit to different levels of low and very low income AMI brackets, and preserve the assets while continuing to add value. And that's something we still see in the affordable housing asset class. The one on Noble Avenue is a little different of a story. That was a fully rent stabilized asset. While it was also a former Mitchell Lama building, it was a fully rent stabilized asset without any tax benefits and really not categorized as affordable housing as much as workforce housing. And that's a tale of a different market, right? Rent stabilized, I think it's fair to say, is probably the product type that is stressed the most in New York City, and especially after the HSTPA regulations in 2019 and how they changed the laws, and also by rising interest rates and exploding insurance costs and other line items. And this is unfortunately an asset that lost a decent amount of value from when we sold it in 2014. Originally, it was about a 30% plus loss in value. And I would say it's fair to mention that the more competitive buyer's profile or buyer profile for this type of asset tends to come more from the high net worth and private capital family office, a group or someone that has a longer term horizon that can speculate that something is going to change in the next 5 to 10 years, that the status quo that we're currently in, and especially as it relates to rent stabilized housing, is not sustainable. So, you know, they're able to rationalize a purchase, even if it's a sub 7% cap rate, which is really negative leverage on a rent stabilized asset that has relatively static income growth per RGB guidelines. But it is a very good basis. And again, if you do have that longer term horizon, and if you are confident that the status quo will not continue forever, then that's how they're able to rationalize the purchase.
Let's talk about the 610 amendment.
Mm. Yes, very front of mind for a lot of affordable housing operators, and actually a good example of pragmatic legislation in our city and something that's needed much more of. So at the end of 2022, the Senate passed a bill, the Senate and the Assembly passed a bill, Senate Bill 7235, which worked its way into the terminology at the agency level, the city and state agencies, as what's called a 610 amendment, 610 being the section in which it's covered in the private housing finance law. And what that 610 amendment, or what this law really says, is that if you have a building that's subject to a regulatory agreement, really affordable housing in New York State, you're able to go and seek and obtain what's called a 610 amendment from the governing agency. So if you have a reg agreement with HPD, you go to HPD. If you have a reg agreement with HFA, you go to HFA, HCR, whatever the case might be. What that 610, once you obtain that 610 amendment, what that allows you to do is rent to tenant-based vouchers and supersede or go above and beyond the legal rent constraint for that unit. And what that really provided, Mike, is a lifeline for these affordable housing projects that were floundering otherwise. These were projects that were barely breaking even, if they were breaking even. And this was a pragmatic piece of legislation that allowed, and also serves multiple purposes, right? Not only does it allow the operator and the project to get into the black instead of the red, it also helps incentivize owners to continue to rent out to voucher-based tenants, you know, whether it's NYCHA or HPD or whatever the case might be. And it's something that's been very well received. Unfortunately, you know, with the staffing levels at the agencies, it's still taken a while to really realize this increases in income. And if there's a backlog of applications for this, and even once you obtain it, it's a backlog to get those vouchers marked up. But it was a really, really helpful piece of legislation. And if something like that can be replicated in the rent-stabilized world, or it should be replicated in the rent-stabilized world, it'll give those assets a similar type of lifeline.
Speaking about that, is there any legislation on the rent-regulated side to increase rents above the stabilization rates?
Nothing meaningful that I saw in bill form yet. I mean, keep in mind that both the House and the Senate are just finishing up their budgets, so I think we'll have a better lens on what's going to be hotly negotiated and discussed in the coming month or two. But nothing that really jumps out as a big revenue driver like 610 Amendment was. This was a clear driver or potential to drive revenue. There are some decent pieces of legislation that are out there. One of them relates to discriminatory practices in the insurance market as it relates to affordable housing and workforce housing. I'm hearing decent things about that. I don't have any clue on how it's going to be enforced.
Okay, let's go to another topic, which is highly interesting, the conversion of office buildings to residential. Mm. What's your thoughts about it? You've been quoted that you're not a major proponent on that.
Have I? I don't even remember where that was. But I think it could be. Look, it would be great if we can find out a feasible way to do it. And I don't think it's going to happen without substantial amount of incentives. These buildings are old, they're inefficient, not many line up perfectly with the core and the light and air in order to do it in a cost-effective way. I know there's some developers that this is their business and their core competency, but if you speak with those developers, they need a basis that's close to $200 a foot. And frankly, I don't see a tremendous amount of those opportunities where everything fits perfectly for that. At the same time, there's clearly a big incentive and push on the city level to do it, so much so that they have specialists that are sitting waiting to help field these type of questions and help navigate through it. But I just haven't seen anything that, to me, stands out as a meaningful, scalable way to do this.
Are anybody seeking to buy office buildings in New York City today, especially B and C as opposed to potentially an A?
I think short answer is yes. You know, that's not our core market per se, but we do see it. And you know, what's interesting, it might end up becoming more of our core market a little more because I think some of the institutions are shying away from that too. And you're seeing some of the high net worth family office private buyers start to make plays in that space too because they see the long-term value. You know, that said, I do think these B and C assets have a ways to go until they get to a good resolution. Especially if they're not close to a major transportation hub.
What about hospitality assets?
Hospitality assets have definitely rebounded. I think, you know, the lack of inventory, the legislation relating to Airbnb, you know, has helped propel it. I think, you know, all the statistics are pointing to tourism being up and, you know, certainly as it relates to, and keep in mind also there's been a decent amount of units filled with migrant housing, you know, around the city. So that's also constraining supply a little bit and pushing up average daily room rates. So we have seen a resurgence of interest. And if you look at the data, the values and the transactions that have occurred in the past 6 to 12 months are definitely up.
Vacant land. Last question.
Vacant land. Vacant land. It depends on where, you know, what we're finding in workforce housing, outer borough locations, values really haven't dropped too tremendously because, frankly, the execution was always affordable on the large-scale projects in order to absorb and capitalize it correctly. In good locations, they have come down considerably. And that's primarily because there's no real 421A successor out there now. The projects that were vested and extended or have the ability to get a C of O by the end of, by mid-2026 are flying very close to the sun right now. So it's really a condo market. You know, when you talk about prime areas and those values are down considerably, I would say, you know, 20-30% plus.
Okay, I'd like to thank Vic Sozio for being here, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Michael.